Fear and hatred have been dogging American Muslims and even non-Muslims who are perceived to be Muslim, particularly since 9/11. At the same time, misunderstandings about the religion are widespread and affect many even within the world of Islam. So perhaps now, more than ever, a responsible and comprehensive look at the teachings of Islam is in order. An ambitious new book is about to be released by Harper One, titled The Study Quran, A New Translation and Commentary. And joining me now from the United Arab Emirates is one of the scholars who participated in this project, Dr. Joseph Lombard. Dr. Lombard, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much for having me, Reverend Gaddy.
I want to begin by asking you to help me describe to our listeners the Study Quran. What is it?
Well, the Study Quran is the first Quran in any Western language to have, along with the translation, about 1 million words of commentary that help one understand the historical context of certain verses of the Quran and to understand how many verses of the Quran have actually been interpreted by Muslims throughout Islamic history. So it offers a kind of complete, comprehensive introduction to the text and lets one dig deep into certain passages that one might want to further engage.
Mm-hmm.
And accompanying that, it's got 17 essays that also touch upon important aspects of the Quran.
Mm. How did you come to participate in this project?
Well, I sat down to lunch with Sayyid Hussein Nasser back in February of 2006, I guess it was.
Hmm.
And he told me that he had been asked to do this and that he wanted me to join him as one of the editors. He and I assembled the rest of the editorial team, and we started a project that took us up until today, and it's coming out this month.
Yeah. Who are the other contributors? What are these all scholars in the Quranic literature?
All the other editors, Yunair Dali, Maria Daycake, who are also general editors with me, they're also scholars who are Muslim but are also trained in the Western academic tradition, conversant in Quranic Arabic and Quranic studies.
Mm-hmm.
And then our assistant editor, Mohammed Rustam. So we're all people who come from different, slightly different backgrounds, but have all been trained in the West and worked extensively with the Quran in many different ways.
Dr. Lombard, why did you think this was needed, particularly right now?
Well, I think there's a tremendous lack of literacy regarding Islam and what Muslims actually say and actually believe.
Mm-hmm.
With this volume, there will be things that people will disagree with, but at least they're going to know what Muslims actually think about these things rather than many of the misrepresentations that we find flying around everywhere from the halls of the Vatican to the halls of academia to talk radio.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, was there anything that was new to you that came up while you were working on this project?
A million things. I mean, being this deeply engaged in the over 1,000 years of scholarship regarding the Quran that's been written by Muslims opens up so many vistas within the tradition. I have a lifetime of projects built up just from the things that I noticed within this. But I think one of the things that really evades a lot of people is the real plurality of the classical Islamic tradition. It's something that people like me who study the tradition, we know in principle. But then when you really start digging into it, and you really see how diverse the tradition has been and the many different ways in which verses of the Quran for which you might think, oh, there's one general interpretation, but the many different ways in which it's been engaged over the years, this is something that it's like the stunning complexity of a crystal. The more you look into it, the more amazing you find it is.
Hmm. I know that there can be all kinds of debate about interpretations of the text. But my guess is there were also debates about the accuracy of the text. Tell us how you resolved which text of the Quran did you use, and were all of you comfortable with the one that's being published?
We're all very comfortable with the one that's being published. There were, of course, differences of opinion. Now, I have to ask you a question for that. I gather that you're referring to the idea that there might be different, somewhat different versions of the original Quran?
Yes, and I don't know whether I'm asking that question the right way or not, because I think there are descriptions of teachings that some people identify as the Quran and some other people identify as something that's not really the Quran but is legitimately a part of a discussion of it.
Within the Quranic text itself, there is very standard agreement, particularly within the Islamic tradition, as to what is the actual text. There are multiple readings of the text.
Mm-hmm.
Those readings can sometimes lead to slight variations mm-hmm. at times, but what we did was in the commentary, we would incorporate those variations in the readings when they had a significant impact on the interpretation of the text.
Mm-hmm.
When the slight variations in how you might read something did not have a significant impact on the interpretation of the text, we didn't put that in the commentary. Now, there's one particular reading of the Quran that is the most widespread today,
mm-hmm.
and that's the one that we employed. And there are two or three places where we used one of the other readings of the text in the translation because it made more sense in the translation, it made more sense to us overall.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we've used that particular reading style, which is known as the Hafs reading style.
Okay. As I'm sure you've experienced, and as certainly I've experienced in being an interpreter of the Bible, both the Hebrew Scriptures and the Christian Scriptures, people proof text. They rip texts out of their context and make them mean whatever they want them to mean rather than what the text itself in its original context meant. What are some of the texts that you think are most important for people to understand in order to be correct in their interpretation of Islam?
Some of the texts to understand, well, that's a good question. I think that one of the things that it's most important for people to actually understand, and I think that almost all Muslim scholars throughout history would agree with me on this, is the opening chapter of the Quran. And that's why our interpretation of it is actually the longest in terms of the percentage of commentary to actual words of translation. Because
mm-hmm.
when one digs into it, it really, in a sense, contains the whole of the message of the Quran and the whole of the message of Islam
mm-hmm.
in many ways. But it's interesting that you mentioned this phenomena of proof texting. Because within the classical Islamic tradition, from the very beginning of the commentary tradition, scholars were wary of the ways in which people might do this. And one of the things that they did that really makes Quranic commentary very different from what you have with biblical commentary
mm-hmm.
is that there was a very deep effort to try to confirm the exact historical circumstances of each particular verse.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a verse, that, for example, a famous verse that comes up a lot in the Quran is people say that in Surah 5 of the Quran, it says, do not take the Jews and Christians as friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not actually what it says. When you actually go into it and you look at it and you see the word awliya that people translate as friends, in modern Arabic, you can translate that as friends. But in classical Arabic, especially in the verse that it's used, it actually means don't take them as allies.
Hmm.
And the verse is telling Muslims at the time, don't try to kind of hedge your bets about whether or not Islam is going to succeed by making alliances with other groups and other tribes in case it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in other words, you know, if you're going to be with us, you're going to be with us. If you're not going to be with us, don't try and hedge your bets both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at the actual historical circumstance of the verse, that exact meaning becomes clear. So it's something that Muslims have always guarded against. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But this is actually what you see today with a group like ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they proof text to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why every single classically trained Islamic scholar in the world today rejects them outright, and they've signed documents against them, and some of them have given their lives to oppose them, mm-hmm. is because that is taking proof text to its very dangerous extreme.
My hope is that the readers of this volume are not just Muslims. I hope the readers are widespread in Christianity and in Judaism and in other religions. I think it can be so helpful there if people will learn from it. What do you hope readers of this book will gain from reading the New Translation as well as the commentaries?
Well, for Muslims, I hope that they will gain a greater literacy of the tradition. You know, even a lot of Muslims who can read Arabic don't have the ability to necessarily read the classical commentaries in Arabic, and we used some that were in Persian as well. Mm-hmm. So I hope that Muslims will gain that greater religious literacy. Mm-hmm. I also hope that non-Muslims will go to the text with an open mind, mm-hmm. because really, look, when it comes to the community for whom we can say this is their book, it's us. This mm-hmm. is the book of the Muslims, and it's our responsibility to represent it properly. And I think that there's a degree to which that hasn't fully happened mm-hmm. in the West. It's our responsibility to represent it properly, and it's also our right to do so. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, with this volume, I hope that we have taken on that responsibility and in a sense seized that right, and that it will put us into a genuine dialogue with people of other faiths and people mm-hmm. who are not of faith, mm-hmm. who are from outside the Muslim tradition, so that at least when they come to ask us something, it will be based upon what our tradition actually says, rather mm-hmm. than what some pundit out there says Islam says, when Muslims sit there and say, what? I've never heard a Muslim say that. So I'm hoping that it will basically improve the dialogue for everyone involved.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, that is a great hope I have for you, too. I'd like for you to talk just a second about the launch event for the Study Quran this week in Washington. I know you're scheduled to be there for this event. We will have people from State of Belief there and people from Interfaith Alliance there. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be in D.C., and I can't. But tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, we're going to have the major media launch event Thursday, November 12th at Georgetown University, and Syed Hussein Nasser, the editor-in-chief, will be there, and myself and the other general editors, as well as Imam Soheib Webb, and then it will be chaired by Mahdi Hassan, mm-hmm. Who's with Al Jazeera, among other things. Mm-hmm. And we hope that it will be an event where people can ask questions, such as the ones that you're asking, mm-hmm. and we'll help other people to start viewing this text as a major move towards a broader and more effective engagement with Islam in the West.
Good. The Study Quran, a new translation and commentary, is being released Tuesday by Harper One with a launch event in Washington, D.C. We'll post information at stateofbelief.com. Dr. Joseph E.B. Lombard is currently a professor at the American University of Sharjah in the Department of Arabic and Translation Studies, a translator, commentary, author, and general editor for the Study Quran. He's also a former advisor for interfaith affairs to King Abdullah II of Jordan, and he's taken part in several interfaith dialogues, among them the Common Word Initiative, an important initiative. Dr. Lombard, I've already said I'm excited about the release of this publication. I'm grateful to you and your colleagues for the time and scholarly energy that you poured into it. And I'm really thankful for you being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Well, Reverend Gaddy, thank you very much for having me. It was an honor.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. That ought to be enough to think about for a long time, and maybe even some actions can be taken on what you're thinking. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. We rely on listener support to keep this show on the air. As the end of the year gets closer, please consider a tax-deductible contribution to State of Belief and Interfaith Alliance. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to friends or acquaintances, please tell them about the show. Share the interviews with them. It's very easy to do in Facebook, Twitter, and at stateofbelief.com, of course. Stateofbelief.com's also where you'll find extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today, a member of Interfaith Alliance. Go to interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.